Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Oh, yeah, yeah!
That's Mrs. Byrne. She just got her entire M&S shop for free. She's this week's randomly selected Sparks customer who doesn't need to pay for a thing. Not only that, every time she shops at M&S and scans her digital Sparks card, M&S donates to her chosen Sparks charity. Plus, she gets personalized offers and treats. Sparks, the new reward scheme from M&S. Good things happen every time you shop. Join today in the M&S app. Terms, conditions and exclusions apply. For details, see marksandspencer.ie.
Welcome to the Dope Black Dads podcast, a place where we are changing the narrative and having progressive conversations about black fathers, as well as creating a safe digital space for the community. This is the Dope Black Dad podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison, and today I'm over the moon. We've got my usual Avengers with me. We have Ortiz and Marvin too, we call him, usually because I hate the fact that he sounds impeccable in audio. So welcome, Marvin, Ortiz. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, well, thanks.
Amazing. Everyone seems very serious today. This is so unlike us. Today we're joined by
MP
David.
In the building, that's why.
Because we got what?
We've got an MP in the building, that's why. Come correct this afternoon.
Our next guest
come
also
correct.
Yeah, our next guest also has a ratchet and a ratchet side. We're going to try and get into a little bit of both, but ultimately we're here today with David Lammy. For everyone who doesn't know, he's the Tottenham Labour MP. He's an incredible advocate for social progression, has been fighting for many, many years. I'll say since 1997, probably before. Harvard graduate. You were educated with Obama. Is that an accurate way to frame it?
Well, we both went to Harvard and we became friends, but we were not there at the same time. Is the truth.
Ah, there you go. Alumni. Yeah. And so thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate you taking time out to have this conversation with us. How are you, David?
I'm well. You can probably see just little fat bags under my eyes. So I'm slightly burning the candle at both ends, and, you know, in work wise, but I'm good. Yeah.
Good. That's good. Well, to be fair, the country is in a huge transition and there's a lot to hold them to account for. So I envision that's why you're particularly overworked at this time. But I think every time I've come across you, you seem like you're doing multiple things at the same time and it's very intense. Has your workload got better or worse since you started?
I've had a tough workload for some time, you know, well over a decade. If you think about, I mean, the starting point for any MP's work is their constituency. Mm. And if you went back 10 years, in fact, this year, Tottenham was rioting. Yeah. And we hadn't even really got into austerity. And now we've got a recession. So, you know, it is important to stress that, you know, what does that mean? It means unemployment. Black unemployment is always double what the national unemployment rate is. That means hardship in families. It means less money around. It's for some young people, as you know, it also is the seduction of criminality. And very, very sadly already in Tottenham this year, there have been 4 murders, and knife crime events. So that's the starting point. And then beyond that, of course, I'm now in a more senior position in the Labour Party. I've got the justice brief. And therefore last week I was obviously leading for Labour on some of the change the government wants to make around protest. And then, you know, people know long-standing interest in criminal justice, the Lammy Review, and there are lots of issues I've taken up over the years education, all that. So I've always had a busy, I like to be busy. I mean, I like to be busy, but yes, this is a tough time.
So when we knew you was going to have you on, I was really inspired because it just landed in my mind this question. And when we talk to our groups and when we talk to our community as a whole, we're always asking this question in the sense of what our vision is, not only for ourselves as a group, us as an intersection, but then also us as being British. What actually is the vision that we're chasing? And I think there's probably two approaches. There's one that is, this is what Britain is and this is how you work within it and try to make it make sense for you. And then there's also how you carve out your own piece of it so that you can control more of the outcomes for you, your family, your friends. And I really started to think about what actually is the vision for Britain in 2021. I couldn't land at one that really either romanticized or was clear to me. Does any of you guys have a view as to what it is at this time?
I'll confess, I don't know what it is. I have my own ideas about what I think it should be, which I'm sure we will all get into later, but I don't know what it is currently.
Marvin, are you romanticized by any single vision of Britain as to and one that preferably includes you? Or even if it doesn't, it doesn't really matter, really.
I'd agree with Autis. I think I've actually come to terms with the fact of being uncomfortable or not knowing what Britain looks like or what Britain, including me, looks like. I think before I've tried to be maybe a bit more idealistic, but taking into account the recent events, especially what happened last year, it's like, yeah, I'm at a point where I don't know, but I'm optimistic that it will change for the better.
Can I just give a slightly damning approach? So we know about aggressive policing that's very much present in all of our lives. Specifically me, I still have, you know, things that I feel from growing up in Hackney. The NHS is underfunded. The financial disparity has increased in the last 10 years. Our strange attempt to romanticize the US has failed and we seem to be in slight limbo. We are very aware of Brexit and the financial impacts that's going to have on probably every single family. The conversation around race seems to have completely turned into a brick wall of no, it's not, and it doesn't happen, and it wasn't racism, it was something else. We've seen a massive response to gender issues in the last few weeks. Is there anything, David, I suppose your charge is to give us some sort of confidence as to either what it is now or what it is that you would like it to be. Am I overselling it?
Look, I think you touched on a point earlier, which is America. Our challenge in this country is to come to terms with being 4% just above of the population. And what we need is an inclusive vision that includes us. It's still the case too often that black people who are successful, you're hearing the first to do this, the first to do that. That is still happening. That should not be happening anymore. Those glass ceilings should have gone, right? There has been a conversation as a result of Black Lives Matter, but clearly for a lot of people within the community, they're tired of conversation. They want action. The theme that you hear time and time again amongst black folk is, I'm tired. And why do they say I'm tired? They say I'm tired because this is actually no longer about blackness. You know, the four of us, we share something so powerful and there's a deep understanding that we don't even have to explain. It's not about blackness. This, the conversation that's required, the action that's required is about whiteness. That is the truth of it. And when there's a conversation about whiteness, and some action that flows from that, because in the end, that is where, on the whole, if you look at the figures, the power lies, then we will get change. Now, what excites me, what is the hope in that, is that I actually do sense amongst a younger generation, millennials, Generation Y, Z, I do sense that there is a kind of, we're up for this. I sense people educating themselves, reading the books, getting with the issues, and not just on race, but on climate, a whole raft of issues. The problem is the millennials are some way from power, right? The baby boomers still have all the levers of power, whether they're FTSE 100 chairman or chief execs, whether they're running countries, the power is not with the younger folk yet. And so we're in this transition period. But look, I always say, all the things you listed, Marvin, and that I go on about in politics are real and hard and mean and tough. And it depresses me that we have a government. You know, David Cameron asked me to lead the review on the criminal justice system. And that was a bold move, reaching across the political aisle, saying, David, can you do this for me? Why has Boris turned his back on all of that now and talking about structural racism not even existing? He's got Kemi Badenoch, his equalities minister, going out poo-pooing any idea of structural racism. So we are going backwards. There is this populism that doesn't feel like it's inclusive at all. But on the ground, this is where I wanted to end. We've got to be hopeful. The largest minority group in our country, it will come out of the census. I hope you've all done the census. The census is so important for funding, by the way. Please let them count us. Please do your census now. We do exist, right? But the largest ethnic group is people of mixed heritage backgrounds. What does that mean? It means that black and white people are falling in love. They're having children. Actually, let us never forget that the hope is there. And often people on the ground are ahead of where governments are. And you know, so I think the future is hopeful and we've got to fight for it.
So would you say that the dog is wagging the tail or the tail is wagging the dog in terms of the shift from how we've, because I don't know if it's just me and I'm romanticizing, but I felt maybe 15, 20 years ago, the conversation around race was a lot healthier. And is that the people...
We had a Labour government.
Oh,
we had a Labour... No, we did! We had a Labour government. We had people like Obama came along. Where we, you know, things were different. We had growth. This is before austerity.
Yeah.
Look, when there's money around, yeah, we're up for a conversation about racism. I mean, it's when resources get scarce. things can change. Let's get real, Marvin. Come on.
do you think that's the main driver? Is this that is the economic shift has meant that, you know, we need to divide where the money is going and not going, and blame helps divide where that money and attention and time is going into? Or is it the leadership of the Conservative government explicitly? Is it media? Where is the genesis and what's the reaction?
I think that the world has some very, very serious problems. The Western world has an aging population. Its economies, particularly here in the UK, are no longer based on manufacturing, where goods and things are made in the East, you know, in Africa and places, in China. Over here, it's a service economy. Huge inequality. Vast amounts of the country that have very little. Massive cuts to public sector funding. In that context, I'm afraid the politics of divide and rule kicks in, doesn't it? And a populism kicks in. Trump led the way and it's being mimicked. And it's definitely the case over here, that the Trump playbook is being deployed. And I'm afraid that means that the politics are very crude. So that's what we're dealing with. And I find some of what's going on astounding and depressing. For example, you know, I'm now almost 50. How can we still, after the Scarman inquiry into the Brixton riots in 1981, still be having the same old dusty conversation about stop and search?
Mm.
Can you imagine how there's nothing new in this? Stop and search is not going to crack knife crime in this country. Only a serious conversation about drugs. And who is trafficking cocaine from Colombia through Amsterdam and Spain and then pimping out black boys to run it across the country? That's a serious conversation about county lines. Stop and search isn't a serious conversation about county lines. All it does is alienate the 15 black kids out of the one that you stopped 25 times, embarrassing them in their own street, in their own surrounding, by stretching out their arms and patting them down when they did nothing wrong. But we knew this. We knew this 30, 40 years ago. Why are we still having the conversation now? So that's the sort of stuff, I think, where black communities say, we're tired of this. But, you know, I understand that. And I find, you know, Theresa May changed the stop and search rules after the Tottenham riots. She said, right, we want more accountability. We want less of it. Within 5 years, they've switched it back. Why? Because it plays to a headline in a tabloid newspaper, the Daily Mail, that tells people we're going to fix this problem. They don't fix this problem. They're serious about the problem.
Yeah, I was going to say that the stop and search thing, it's all part of the system, though, isn't it? As in, it's not going to change because it exists to keep us feeling alienated, to keep us feeling far from equal, to keep us feeling marginalized. You know, an intelligent society would recognize that singling out people like that results in a negative feeling within that community about themselves and about their relationship with the police. Why change that? Because it's serving its purpose. It continues to aid keeping us under the boot, as it were, and it continues to drive negative headlines. Why should we expect them to change it?
Well, it depends about who, it's about who them is.
So I
don't know if I'm quiet with that. I'm not such a conspiracy theory. I mean, I think some of this stuff is, you know, for me, this is not Black Panther. I mean, I get where you're coming from, but I think the politics of it are transparent, and that's what leaves people feeling cold, because they feel like, hang on a minute, so I'm actually a pawn to be played with.
So I think what you're explaining is interesting, because I was looking at this idea about conspiracy theories and what drives it, and ultimately it's anxiety. So when people have anxiety around an issue, they then create meaning, and then, you know, these stories are attached to it. But they are rife in our community, and some of them are based in lots of deep logic and evidence, and some of them are, you know, exaggerations of ideas. But I think the important part is that it's a really important thing to pay attention to in terms of how people feel about the country that they're in or the system that they're in. And I think, I suppose what you're saying is that ultimately it's always a bit simpler than that. It's, you know, it serves a headline to drive votes and popular opinion around an idea. And it's usually connected to some sort of funding or commerce or business outcome. And it's not, we're not even in mind. We're not actually even thinking about this at all.
You got it. Yeah. And the measure, by the way, let's just be clear, the measure of a civilized democracy is how that democracy treats its minorities. And it's this, I remember having a wonderful conversation with Cornel West, wonderful American, African American academic. And he said, it's so hard for you guys in Europe because, you know, you've got to understand here in the United States, it's hard to describe African Americans as a minority community, whereas you guys really are a minority. And he said to me, what that means is the majority sometimes doesn't see, doesn't know, doesn't care. And so we've always got to be also in the business, and I'm always in the business of allyship. We have to find allies, progressive allies. And those allies will not look like us. They can't possibly. It's why in politics, I've always allied myself to feminist causes and gender equality. And I did that at the Dispatch Box last week on the issue of violence against women, I think very effectively. I've always allied myself to LGBTQ issues. I did that during the same-sex marriage debate a few years ago, because in the end, I know that if we don't hang together as groups that can sometimes be sat on, we're not going to make the progress that we need to make.
I think, you know, David, with the point you mentioned about 1981 and the disparity there with, I guess that was the SUS laws and stop and search.
That's right, you got it.
I think there's like a woeful ignorance on Black history, and the fact that Black history is actually world history as well. And I think what was really good with Black Lives Matter is that people saw it, they saw, you know, the murder of George Floyd. It was undeniable and it was racist. And I think there needs to be a lot more education around Black history, especially in relevance to, you know, to the UK and to England, where people can then understand and we can tap into the empathy that if they were taught about what happened, if they taught about what's happened to the Windrush generation, if they were taught about the fact that, you know, slavery in the UK didn't necessarily happen on British soil, but it happened in the Caribbean. And that's why it's not as evident as it is in America. I think that will start to educate people so they can become allies. Because I do like to think that most people, when you do pluck on their heartstrings or when you do tell them the truth, they will change their thinking. But at the moment, if all they're getting is a Daily Mail headline or the comment section on the Daily Mail, then that's all they're going to believe. And so we do need to kind of challenge that and begin to educate people, especially through, you know, that the BBC series around Small Acts and, you know, the kind of Steve McQueen series. I think when people see that and they begin to understand what we and our parents and our grandparents went through, they do start caring.
Wonderful point. Absolutely wonderful. There is a hell of a lot to do in our schools, not just in history, but in history, as you know, we're sort of obsessed with the two H's, Henry VIII and defeating Hitler. And there's a hell of a lot in between that we need to understand. Yeah. And colonialism is a big part of that. You know, I said in the Commons after Windrush, quoting from Stuart Hall, the wonderful Professor Stuart Hall, who's no longer with us, "We are here because you were there. I am the sugar in the British cup of tea." And I love that because it harks back to my ancestors in Guyana on those sugar fields, on those plantations, and that commodity of sugar being so, Britain being so desirous of it and the export and sale of it that it enslaved black people to, you know, to work on those plantations for that particular commodity. And you're right. That history really is not sufficiently understood. And, you know, even as you know, I mean, we all know this, you raise slavery very quickly. The conversation switches usually within about 5 seconds to abolition. Can we just stick on the several hundred years?
Yeah.
But even on abolition, well, let's talk about the rebellions. Let's talk about enslaved people did themselves to fight for their freedom. We don't know the names of those heroes. They're known actually in the Caribbean and in America, but they're not really known in UK schools. I sort of think how my shoulders would have lifted up had I known those names and known those stories of those great men. And it makes me well up even just thinking about those individuals. People like Sam Sharp in Jamaica, Coffee in Guyana. Those names are not household names, and they should be. No films have been made about those guys. And yes, thank you, Mr. Wilberforce, but there's much more to discuss just on that singular agenda, but there's so much more. So you're absolutely right. The history, I mean, I could be wearing my T-shirt, Black History is British History. And by the way, let me just make this point also. Yes, I suspect all of us in this conversation, we own our blackness. We say we're black with pride, and we embrace that. But let me be absolutely clear. I am working for a day in which that descriptor is not, because I am not black. I am of African descent. That adage of black, which was obviously that takes you back to the N-word and other things, that was ascribed to me when Europeans invented this business of scientific racism and decided that there was a pecking order that put my ancestors and your ancestors at the bottom of it, basically. So it's also to understand that we are striving for a period where, yes, we embrace a culture, which is of African heritage, if you like, but actually the badge of being black, which has all sorts of things associated with it, is something that we can estate. Because we did not coin this. This was coined by others.
Well, Autis, can I just speak to you? Because I know you being on TV at the time when you first started was at a time where that wasn't very common. So you've obviously walked into a room which is ultimately you are, you know, one of the few black faces on TV. I know, David, you have a similar experience in terms of politics at a time. Like, can you just speak to, because I think we're at the structural level, but just on the human level, it's really good just to understand what holding that space is like and what that feels like in comparison to being amongst, you know, what is happening in the wider Britain.
It's funny because I didn't pay it as much attention then as I do or as I would now. When I first got into television, the whole industry was an alien thing to me anyway. And everything that I had done from the course I chose in pharmacy and higher education right through my time at television, I was pretty much the only brother in the room anyway. So it was, and even at my primary schools. So it was something that I'd become used to and didn't dwell on. But yes, I was the only brother in the room. When I auditioned initially for my first gig as a TV presenter. I was the only black boy. When I moved to the BBC a few years later, preceding me had been Andy Peters, and he hadn't been doing anything at CBBC for a few years. So I occupied that space on my own for a number of years before Lizzo came next. Nigel Clarke came after. Michael Underwood was there as well for
There's always room for one.
I was just thinking that you're naming them, and I know every single person you're talking about, and you're naming them, and I'm like, it is just one. It's just one.
Yeah. I mean, at any one time, there were probably three of us on the rotor doing a program or continuity at the same time. The first time it really struck me that there is a quota and we've already got one, so we don't need any more, was when I tried to move from children's BBC to mainstream. At the time, who would have been doing Big People BBC at the time? Lenny Henry was doing dramas and was pretty much the go-to brother. And as a result of that, of course, I'm not blaming him. There was no room. Do you know what I mean? There was no room. There were no opportunities or anything like that. I was advised to leave children's, reinvent myself, and then come back. How reinvent myself? What do I do? My shtick, what I do and did well was communicate with, you know, lashings of humor. So I began then to start to question whether my blackness was an obstacle to progressing further. And at the same time, you know, I have to freely admit that at some points being black was actually an aid, because when I started, and as has always been the case, you know, if you knew the black guy on the estate, he was the cool guy and it was cool to run with him. So when they wanted a cool vibe for a particular program or a particular channel, it was me that they got in. So it had served me in a positive sense, or in a reverse sense, I guess, at some time. But whenever I went in for meetings, prospecting about new work, sharing new program ideas, pitching and stuff, there was never another black person on the other side listening to my ideas until maybe about 2006, 2007, and that was Sherwin Beckford.
And just for context, what year did you start?
I started in 94.
So I think just to generalize, can I just generalize what's just been said? Because there's a couple of things that I think flow from that. One is, I think there are particular challenges for black men, in terms of there's never more than one, or there can never be more than one. Two, I think it's still the case that our stories, the complexity, the diversity, and by the way, it's not always bleak and depressing stories. We don't always.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I just want to see, you know, different versions of kidulthood or adulthood or whatever.
I knew what you were going to say, but you were trying to find a nice way of saying it.
We've got humour and satire and range. That stuff never gets covered. I think the other thing is our mental health, because the truth is you end up with an imposter syndrome. You end up feeling that you don't fit. It can really play on your mind. This is stressful. And actually this brings us full circle as to why, very sadly, during this pandemic, we've seen the serious health inequalities that exist for people from our community. Because it's not surprising, because this is going on in workplaces up and down the country, in organizations as varied as working for retail and being a senior manager at a retail store, to working for the BBC, frankly, to working in the House of Commons. It's the same story. And there's so much to fix, so much to fix. And we're required to have a lot of resilience in the face of this.
So David, and this is one question that it came from our group, actually. And it's one that I hear often, but I think you're probably best served to answer it. It's this idea of, so even for the Obama effect, he's come into power. We expect him to fight specifically for black issues and to move the needle for black people specifically. And I suppose that same charge is laid at your door in terms of what do you do to help black people. Is there an insight into the inner workings of how politics works? What's the actual truth behind people sort of understanding that you can make the change, and what are you doing? You haven't done enough. You need to do more.
Well, I always say to someone who says to me, what are you doing? For me, the first starting point is, what the hell are you doing? Where did you lift your ass to do anything? Did you even vote? What are you doing exactly? What organizations have you joined? Are you helping in the local football club with the kids? Are you helping to stop some boy being seduced by a knife crime? What are you doing? Not just for your son. I hope you're there for your son, by the way, but for others. So that's the starting point, right? Because I know what I'm doing. I'm doing my best is what I'm doing. And I think that's self-evident. I don't want to list the things that I've done, but I stood up on Windrush and got that inquiry. We haven't got the full justice, but we're halfway there. I stood up on Grenfell. I've raised our taxpayers pay for Oxford and Cambridge. Shouldn't some black people be able to go? I raised that in our national life. I was there for the riots, and I raise these issues, and I do what I can for my constituents. And I do this against a backdrop where my party has not been in power for a decade. So I feel I've been able to bring some change, not the full change, but some change, throw some spotlight, despite the fact that actually my party has not had the power. So it's the sheer strength of opposition and focus, media focus and articulacy that gets you some change, not enough, but some. So politics can work. It does require organization. I don't know if we're always as organized as we need to be in terms of the coming together. You have to show up. You have to be there. And particularly if you're a minority group, if you're only 4% of the population, you have to kind of show up. I was thinking of Windrush. I remember when I was discussing with Lenny Henry what we're going to do about Windrush. And I actually said to Lenny, can you get some black artists and stars together and just walk up number 10 with a petition on the Monday morning, and the TV cameras there, which would bring a spotlight to it. And then he said, sure, David. I said, I'm going to put him for an urgent question, but I'm not sure I'm going to get my urgent question in Parliament. Anyway, it turned out I got my urgent question. So Lenny didn't have to do that. But the point is, actually, imagine if just 0.2% of the black community had sat down in the street in Whitehall and said enough is enough. In fact, just imagine it was not even the men in our community, it was black women in our community had just said enough is enough. Just imagine if we could be that organized. Actually, maybe on the issue of knife crime, if we could be that organized, what would happen? When has that happened in this country? When is it going to happen? When are we going to be that organized? So now, Black Lives Matter maybe was the beginning of something, because people were turning out. It's not just about our community. As I said before, people were turning out of all colors to protest. But it is to say that I think politics does matter. It's all we have in a democracy, unless you support anarchy. And having seen anarchy close up, because rioting in a sense is an element of that, I would say that the pain that innocent people suffer in those circumstances, when you burn down someone's shop or their car, I'm sorry, I'm a Democrat. I wouldn't be in politics if I wasn't. I want to find democratic ways to resolve difference and dispute. And I think that organization, turning up, being there, making your voice heard is what you need to do. And let me just, this last point I would say, my mother used to always say to me, when I was feeling sorry for myself, and there were moments where I felt sorry because of racism. There were moments where my own mental health was hurting because of racism. She would always say to me, David, live up to your ancestors' prayers. And that was to say that they prayed on that ship that their great, great, great would one day be there. And that great, great, great is me. So it is incumbent of us to be political, to get active and to be active and to be engaged, it seems to me.
So is it fair to say that there's a work stream that we need to do, and we can sit there and ask for the people who are currently in power to do some of this work, but the reality is that they probably don't see us, understand us, or know us well enough to do the work effectively. You are there on the front lines trying to make that conversation happen as much as possible, but the work is that we then need to be visible, be active, be loud, drive the conversation, to then hand you the ball to keep the conversation happening in the political realm, but also culturally, it's in our court to do the work, because we're relatively a small part of the population. Also, and to partner with other intersections to collectivize and become a bigger block and put more actions together. Is that a fair way to summarize?
I think that's a fair way to say. The only thing I haven't mentioned here, which I ought to mention for those who are conscious, who are listening, is of course there is a black diaspora. That there is this is a story bigger than just here in the UK. There are black people across Europe. And actually, you know what? I would argue that here in the UK, we probably are a bit further forward than our friends in France next door, or in Italy, you know, where there are other problems. And, you know, I talk a lot about the America's context of enslaved people, which America, Brazil, the Caribbean, South America. But of course, we could also have talked about Africa. This week we've had Comic Relief. I've raised issues before. about Comic Relief.
I'm going to be honest here.
I've taken a lot of bats. I took a lot of brick bats.
Yeah, you went on a run, and you was sitting on platforms and really giving it to people. And they were like, so are you saying that white people shouldn't help then? But the way you was just giving it was like there was no fat on the argument. It was clear. That was a true hero moment.
People don't know there are skyscrapers in Lagos, Dar es Salaam. Mm. They have no idea. They have no idea that Ghana has one of the most booming economies in the world. Come on, let's balance this conversation. So there is a diaspora that we also have to be conscious of that connects us. And we have to be salient of, it seems to me, when we have these debates and have these arguments and build these alliances. I mean, my sense is often with my African brothers and sisters that is understood. There's a lot of going back and forth between friends of mine who are, you know, Nigerian, Ghanaian. They're constantly going back and forth. So I think that understanding is perhaps growing a little bit more in the community.
My name is Sandra. I live in a hotel with my mum and dad. I have a new brother. He cries a lot. I think he wants to go home.
When a child is born into homelessness, the damage caused could last a lifetime. But you can help. Please call Focus Ireland at 1-850-204-205 and give whatever you can. One simple gift from you today could change the course of a child's life forever.
It's interesting because I'm here in South Africa at the moment, and the attitude here is almost like they're in a much worse socioeconomic standing than you are. But the middle class here, and the people who are taxpayers, there's 3 million now, I think 46 million. They're fearless. They're very much ready for the task at hand, and they're really looking to work. And I'm not sure if the energy is the same in the UK. It feels like we're constantly on some sort of, like, all of our energy goes into fighting our likeness on Twitter and not into actually growing and building anything. It always seems to be like, you know, there was a point. So I stopped doing most radio and TV interviews for the last year just because I realized I was being called in. And it was just like, someone said something racist, Marvin. What do you think? And I was just like, stressed.
What do you think? Racism again. We didn't understand the last 100 times. Explain it again.
So I just felt like it became a bit of a waste of time, and there was no action in it, and there was nothing coming along. Marvin and Alter, do you think there's an almost like
I said nothing, by the way. I said very little on Meghan and Harry because I just thought, we're going around again here. I can't take this. I can't do this.
Yeah, there's that, and it's a case of echoing the sentiment that you raised earlier, David, like, people are tired. You know, we're tired of having to explain it again and again and again and again. So, you know, Marvin, there's no surprise to me that you're done with going on shows and being our representative, the talking head. Me personally, I only want to engage with those that have a curiosity about it or have approached me and said, I heard something you mentioned when you were on the Dope Black Dads forum, or that you put up on your Instagram stream, or, you know, when you were talking about whiskey, the three of you also touched on a race issue. Those are the people that I'm happy to engage with. Yes, there are still difficult conversations, but they have already presented to me that they have an open ear and that they are willing to at least listen. Do you know what I mean? Trying to shout into the ear of someone who isn't listening, it's just a waste of time, waste of energy.
Yeah. I'd also say, I think we've been so disenfranchised over here that I don't know about you guys, but many people I know feel like we're still on the plantation. Like, we don't feel like it's ours. We don't feel entitled. We don't feel accepted. And many people still have pipe dreams of going back home or going back to Africa. And so sometimes I think that's why not as many people are kind of up for the fight on this soil in as much as they'd want to travel back home, because they feel like, what's the point? And I think there's something there about emasculating both the black male, but just disqualifying us as a people that, we don't want to fight. When I did a Operation Black Vote a few years ago, what I realized is, in my local community, decisions are made whether there's two people in that room or whether there's 10 people in that room. The decisions will still be made on that Wednesday night when you're at home, you know, watching the FA Cup or watching Champions League or something like that. And it's just that, where we've just disenfranchised ourselves by not engaging because we just don't feel like it's for us. So we're like, no, we'll leave that. But by doing that, we can't then complain when we don't get the results that we want. And I feel, back to the point that Ortiz and David was making earlier, that suits a particular narrative. I think people enjoy us being disenfranchised because we're not going to put up a fight.
Yeah. David, just before you go, I have one other question. So every time you do something amazing online, whether you're saying something that's really moving people or you're reminding people about Stacey Dooley, I go and do a little search, and I like to see the sentiment of what's happening within our community. And there's one story about you that keeps coming up that people, especially within our community, are not happy about. And I just want to know, is it true?
What's that?
And is it clear? And it keeps reoccurring. So it was around about the riots, and it was, I don't know if it was a quote or a wider piece about many of the young people involved in last year's riots were from single parent homes, and it was framed as single mothers not raising their children to not loot And it keeps reoccurring and people, you know, constantly tweet about it. And I'm sure you must see some of it in some capacity, but there's something around that.
We live in an age of so much misinformation. You know, it's terrible. You know, the social media, and it's really important to understand that, and this is the sort of, this is the conspiracy. There are right wing groups with really good funding and money. There are foreign governments involved in some of this, and they deliberately stoke and put out misinformation and disinformation to sort of create chaos in a democracy. And the truth is, I am, as David Lammy, as, you know, a senior, and one of the most visible, you know, ethnic minority MPs, and actually now one of the most visible MPs, full stop. Certainly in the opposition, there are reasons why they put out misinformation and stoke division, because it sort of undermines the British democratic system. And then some of the right wing groups are deliberately trying to bring people like me down. You know, that's their job, to create division. And so I've seen stuff on expenses comes up every time, you know, and I, you know, my expenses are, I haven't got personal expenses. I do have to fund the staff in my office to deal with the serious problems that exist in a community like Tottenham, but I don't have it, certainly not compared to other MPs. They raise, all sorts of things, and that's one of them. I was raised by a single mother. I talk about that with pride, the woman that raised me to be the man that I am today. My dad left us at 12. I don't have any bitterness towards my father, who's not with us either. The system broke him, and it breaks a lot of men. And I have raised issues of fatherhood in the Black community and supporting Black fathers, and the wonderful organizations that do support Black fathers, particularly young Black fathers who most often want to be there for their children, and the system sometimes conspires for them not to be, by the way. There's a lot of complexity to that story. It's not a simple story. I actually started the all-party group on fatherhood. So I did a wonderful documentary on Radio 4 on young Black dads. So where I'm coming from on this issue is, I think, is if you do the research, is well known. But if you're relying on social media, then you're going to come across all sorts of bizarre things. The important thing to say is, in whose interest is this line coming? Because it ain't ours. It ain't ours.
That's interesting. My last quick question to you, it just flagged to me as you were speaking. It's really, really important. So there's been a lot of articles. I think Huffington Post was speaking about the disenfranchisement of the Black community in relation to Labour Party, and they feel like political nomads. And in terms of one, I think there's two elements. One, what would your response be to those who feel like they have been disenfranchised by the Labour Party in the last few years? But more significantly, how would you characterize Keir's approach to leadership? Because the polls seem to have him a lot higher than anybody else. And I'm not sure if he's playing like a slight waiting game of not going into too many things and then waiting for an actual election to bite. I'm not sure what the strategy is. And some of the issues he seems to have fumbled around, Black Lives Matter and a couple of other issues that really matter to us. You know, how do you reconcile those two things? Because there's always a bit of a balance.
I think we've got to see the big picture here. You know, we've now had, we're now into the 11th year of a Conservative government. We lost the last election. The Labour lost it badly. We've got to win 124 seats just to have a majority of one. We got to have a swing to win the next election bigger than the swing that Tony Blair got in 1997. This is a steep curve. And let's be clear, Black people, when we say Black people are tired, there's a lot of upset in Black communities. And that's putting it gently. I always say to people say, oh, you're passionate, David Lammy. I said, whatever I'm saying is a sanitized version of what's being said in the Black community. You go and spend some time in a barbershop in Tottenham to really know what's going on. So I'm saying upset, and I'm using a phrase gently, but the point is this, is because we have not felt empowered for well over a decade, and because we can sort of see no end in sight, right? I'm not sure that's any different if you went back to 1989, 1990, when Margaret Thatcher had been in power for a very, very long time. And boy, oh boy, I remember the Tottenham Three. I remember the poll tax riots. I remember the way black people were feeling at that point, right? It's similar. And so I would say I understand where that's coming from. But I would also say progressive forces are generally speaking where we have to be and in our political interests. Labour's got a big task under Keir Starmer. I think Keir represents someone that's serious, that's going to do the work. I'm very much enjoying working with him on the front line. He has a good track record when he was running the Crown Prosecution Service in this country of promoting black people and working with black people like Wendy Williams. People don't know this, who did the review into Windrush. People don't know that. He hasn't even been running the Labour Party for a year. And a lot of the stuff he's picking up, I've got to say, was under the old leadership. So I think people have got to be, but this is a context that is Black Lives Matter and other things have really rattled and upset black communities. So am I going to say to black communities, I want to say I understand why you would give Keir Starmer and the Labour Party a hard time. And it's really important the Labour Party isn't complacent about black votes. All I would say is please, if you're doing that, please, I want to see you giving the government as hard and more, because they are running the country. You know, so I get worried about attacking your own, if you know what I mean, and not keeping your eye on the who's really affecting your life. But I understand why that's the case. And in the end, in politics, if you can't stand the heat, get out the kitchen. So Keir has to stand the heat. I have to stand the heat. That's the nature of the job. I cannot expect the community and the meetings I've done over the years where I've had to go into a room and I've had to take some licks, because black people in that room, they don't get to say this to Boris Johnson. So they're going to say it to me and hope that I might say it to Boris Johnson when I see him. I understand that. That's you got to be grown-ups about it. I'm happy to take some licks. I'm happy to hear what it is you feel and to know that what it is you feel is very emotional for you. And you don't get to speak to power very often. And so, you know, you've got to direct those views at me or Diane Abbott or whoever it is. And there aren't many of us. So Dawn Butler, you know, so I get that, but it's just to put it in some context to say, let's have this imbalance. The man's been in the job for less than a year. He's got a big, big task. At a very tough time, and look at what these conservatives are doing.
Amazing, thank you so much. I'll just quick one word answer. Would there be any value in creating a black party specifically for the UK?
No.
I now want to follow up.
I mean, no. I'm not. No, because that would be, as my mum would say, damn stupidness. One, because we have a first-past-the-post system that in the end is tough on the Greens and the Lib Dems, let alone some newbie come along. Look what happened when Chukwuemunu... I'm sorry. Let's get real here.
Wow.
I'm sorry. It's self-evident, right? Where you got myself?
Oh,
it's self-evident.
Chukwuemunu went from almost leading the Labour Party to like being in Change UK to now being, I don't even know if he's even in Lib Dems anymore, if he's gone into just got a job. I can't even remember, but he's the shift has been immense.
Chukwuemunu's got a great job at Morgan Stanley or somewhere recently.
It's a PR agency or something, I think it is. Yeah.
Chukwuemunu's a good friend of mine. So I don't want to, I'm just saying it didn't work out. I think if Chukwuemunu was on the show, he'd say it didn't work out, right? So how do you just, you know, sometimes there's this wonderful, I think it might even be an African proverb. If you stand still long enough, the whole world comes to you in the end. And sometimes you just, when it's stormy, you just have to stand still and center yourself and know where you stand in the ground. and it comes round. And Chuka had some concerns about the Labour Party at that time. I understand those concerns. But, you know, if you just stood still, guess what? Just a few months later, it kind of comes round. And so there's that business of just that inner calm that you do need to find. Rushing to go form other... Can you imagine the energy it would take to go and form this other party? Energy that you could be deploying now on behalf of the Windrush, on behalf of these young boys that are picking up knives, to challenge Boris Johnson and the nonsense that there's no structural racism. Let us deploy our energy on raising your family the best you can, doing your job the best you can, providing for yourself and your community, volunteering in your local community. Let's put our energy where it's really needed. Please, let's not run off and start dispersing it in all sorts of nonsense areas.
Understood. David, thank you so much. I hope we're friends and you speak best nicely of me also in the future. Altis, Marvin, thank you so much for joining me today. It means a lot. This has been a great conversation and very useful. And I think we've done our community proud to...
Guys, can I just say, this has been like therapy for me. This has been a wonderful conversation. I love it. I kind of want to gig presenting with you guys.
You're so free. You're a dad, you're dope, you're black.
We'll hold you to
approved.
That.
We'll be emailing your team so you can do... Yeah, we'll make it happen.
This has been wonderful.
Thank you, David. Great. Guys, okay. Thank you so much. And so thank you guys for listening. I really much appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another episode. You can find us at Dope Black Dads on all social media platforms. You can also email me for a chat at hello@dopeblackdads.com. Thank you so much for listening, my brothers. I appreciate you all. We'll be back next week.
At AJ Products, we offer workplace solutions for office, school, warehouse, and environment. But at AJ, we do things differently. Our approach to quality and innovation means we design and make many of our own products, giving a more unique and personal service to our customers. Like our sound absorbency screens, office paneling, and our style metal storage cabinets, all designed and built by AJ Products. Visit ajproducts.ie or call 01 28 11 700. AJ Products. Surprisingly more. Ask AJ.
Click and Collect is now available at your nearest Tesco. Get your shopping freshly clicked and freshly picked, ready for you to park and pick up outside the store. Shop online and book your slot for free today at tesco.ie. Tesco. Every little helps.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.